Welcome to the Double Take. I'm Terrence. I'm joined, of course, by Mark this week and our friend Scott to talk about the iconic workplace comedy Office Space. This endlessly quotable movie is one of the best comedies of the 90s while also capturing the soul-sucking nature of being cooped up in a cubicle better than probably any movie ever. So set your radios to a reasonable volume, turn in your TPS reports, and put on your pieces of flair, because this is the Double Take.
From Mike Judge, creator of Beavis and Butthead and co-creator of King of the Hill, comes a movie about people who go to work. Who are part of a team.
And remember, next Friday is Hawaiian Shirt Day.
Okay, but I could set the building on fire.
Who respect their boss.
We need to talk about your flair.
Well, I have 15 pieces on.
15 is the minimum. Brian, for example, has 37 pieces of flair on today. And a terrific smile.
And need to escape.
I don't like my job, and I don't think I'm going to go anymore.
One of these days, I just kick this piece off.
I'm thinking now it might be more fun to just get fired. And I've always wondered what that would take.
Oh, Peter, listen.
Well, it looks like you've been missing quite a bit of work lately.
Well, I wouldn't say I've been missing it, Bob.
That's just a straight shooter with upper management written all over him.
We're going to be getting rid of these people here. Mr. Samir
Naga.
Not going to work here anymore anyway.
You haven't been showing up and you get to keep your job.
Actually, I'm being promoted.
Thank you, Bob.
This is a... It sucked!
Now on the DVD that doesn't suck.
I might be showing him my old face.
Oh.
Including 8 employee favorite deleted scenes.
I believe you have my stapler.
And a behind the cubicle featurette from creator Mike Judge. Office Space, special edition with flair. Coming soon to DVD.
That's the last straw.
I could set the building on fire.
All right, welcome to the Double Take podcast. I'm here today with Terrence, and I'm also here with Mr. Scott. And don't forget, guys, before we start, next Friday, it's Hawaiian Shirt Day. So, of course, we're talking about The Office Space, a 1999 classic. Anyway, Terrence, good morning. How are you, sir?
Morning, Mark. I'm doing good.
Good.
You know, people can get a podcast anywhere. They come to the Double Take for the atmosphere and the attitude.
I noticed you're not wearing your flair today. I don't know if that's a...
No. Nazis had pieces of flair they made the Jews wear, and so... Yeah, I wasn't feeling it.
Yikes. All right. Scott, what's going on, man? Welcome welcome to the show. A quick intro on you. You were a guest on the Casual Nonsense show, and you have an interesting background, which, you know, we can get into and not get into. If they want to know your background fully, they can listen to that episode.
There we go.
We'll put it in the show notes here, but hello.
Hello. Yeah, and I don't like talking about my flair, actually. But Mark, I got to say, I'm really happy to be here. I do think you need to re-record that intro, though, because that was a little rough.
Okay.
Listen, anybody that's listening at this point, they made it past the intro. And
yeah, you're 2 minutes in now, like, appreciate
anybody
it.
Anybody else, it's too late.
Yeah.
It's okay.
So, of course, we're talking about Office Space. I mean, this movie is... I guess you can call it a cult classic. I think this is one of those movies where it was kind of low budget, didn't do great in the theater, but it's so rewatchable. You know, everything in here is just awesome. But before we go too deep in it, Terrence, why don't you give me a lowdown?
Yeah, I mean, as far as plot summary, this is probably the easiest one we've ever had. It's a workplace satire. It's a group of guys that are just tired of their stuffy office jobs. They work in cubicles for this technology computer company all day. And they've got the worst bosses, they've got the worst work experience, and they're tired of it, and they find a way to fight back.
Have you spent time in a cubicle?
I've never been in a cubicle, no. Haven't spent any, I have worked in an office before, but not like that, where you're kind of in your own little prison.
What about you, Scott? You've...
Very rarely. I actually was able to get through a large portion of my life without having to work in an office or having a cubicle, but I have done it.
Nice. Okay.
How about you, Mark?
Oh, yeah. My first office job was, like, my current one doesn't have those cubicle walls, but my first office job, it did. Not quite as, like, they lean into it in this movie a little bit, but those cubicles do exist. Like, those are actual things, right? But it wasn't as bad as that, but there were definitely cubicles, and you have your little section, and you get your little shelves, all your papers and craziness in there. So it's not an enjoyable environment. The office I work in now is more open, you know, for better or worse, but... I say for better.
I got to think so. I think just being trapped in there.
Offices now give you more to do. Like, you hear the stories of Google where they got like slides and, whatever
all
else.
Kinds of craziness.
Like, we have ping pong, we have foosball, we got Xbox. Like, we have things to do at work where you can get up and move around and you have this amenities while you're there. Back in the day, we didn't have that. You had maybe a coffee machine.
Yeah, you know? Water cooler.
Yeah, that's it, right? It's pretty straightforward on some of the stuff that you see in this movie. And to be honest, this movie was in 99. That's about the time I did work in an office like that. So it was probably straight on for the time. So, Scott, what do you think, what's your thoughts on Office Space? This movie means something to you. You enjoy it a lot, so why don't you get us started with...
Yeah, I would love to share like my personal story and journey with this movie. And this is actually there's a little bit of introduction and background on like Mike Judge in the movie too. So like about 1,000 years ago, it was actually like the early 80s, but it feels like 1,000 years ago to a lot of people, I'm sure. Yep. This new cable television channel called MTV came on. And MTV blew everybody's minds because they played music videos all day. And this was like, there was no TikTok, there was no YouTube, there was just like cable and broadcast TV. And
I miss MTV, man.
Yeah, like if there was not something on TV that you didn't want to watch, if there wasn't anything you wanted to watch, then you just didn't watch TV, right? You just did something else. So MTV blew everybody's mind. And then like 100 years later, it was actually like the early 90s, they started playing these cartoons called Beavis and Butthead on MTV, which you guys remember Beavis and Butthead?
Oh, yeah.
The little short, like, and it was just about these two obnoxious teenage guys. And
two morons. Like,
they were morons, yeah. And it was really dumb, but funny and kind of in a dumb way and really, really crude. And like Beavis and Butthead blew everybody's minds. I don't know if you remember, but really blew a lot of people's minds because it was so crude. And it's like, it's not like today when you can go on Reddit right now in 30 seconds, you can find a video of like a 4-year-old saying stuff that would make a truck driver blush, right? But back then, like Beavis and Butthead were so crude. It
upset the apple cart. Any adult, any teacher, parent, whatever, the Beavis and Butthead was like the taboo. Like, oh my God, don't let them watch that.
Yeah. Yeah, like pure evil, right? So Mike Judge was the guy who created Beavis and Butthead, right? So then like another 100 years later or like 2000 or something, a friend of mine named Ian Bobo was telling me about this movie, Office Space. And he was like, he loved this movie. And he's just like effusive about it, right? He's like, oh man, you've never seen Office Space. You got to watch this movie. And he was really, really into the printer scene. He's like, and you got to wait till you see the printer scene. You're going to just love it. Like, he was pretty convinced I was going to love this movie. So I'm like, all right. And either he told me, or maybe like when I picked up the movie to watch it, I saw that it was made by Mike Judge.
Instantly hooked.
Instantly. I'm like, oh my gosh. The guy who made Beavis and Butthead, they let him make a whole hour and a half long movie with real people. Like, I got to watch this. And I remember like within the first 10 minutes, like the two things that first stood out to me. One was, this is not just going to be like an hour and a half of live action Beavis and Butthead, which is really good because I didn't know, you know, I thought maybe that was possibly what it was going to be. And like once the train wreck factor wears off, right, like, you know, that's going to be a lot. And the other thing was like, I was like, wow, this is really funny. This is like really a weird, weird, funny movie. Just like in the first 10 minutes. So yeah. I was like hooked on this movie in the first 10 minutes and then it just got better and better from there. And it's been like one of my favorite, very rewatchable movies, I think, ever since.
You said the way you got introduced to it was a friend like, hey, listen, you got to watch this movie. I feel like this is kind of the quintessential movie, spreading the word to people, telling people, listen, if you haven't seen this, you're going to love it. It's so funny. Check it out. And like you said, Mark, it's kind of a cult classic at this point. Didn't do well in the box office, and then it just took off, and everybody loves it now. Like, you can't mention it without people.
There's so many references to this movie that, like, just under-the-cuff references, like the stapler, the printer, like, there's just a lot of little things here that just, they resonate with a lot of people. Yeah, it's, I agree. It's it's word of mouth. It didn't do great in the box office because it's not flashy. This came out in 99. We'll get to it in a second. There was a lot of other good movies in 99, so if you go into the movies, this probably wasn't your first pick to go see.
Yeah, and apparently did surprisingly well in rentals, right? In video rentals. And I think I read somewhere like the executives at Fox or wherever were really surprised because there were other movies that they had put out that they were expecting to be bigger hits that like apparently Office Space was a bigger hit in the rental market than some of these other movies that they expected to do better.
And this is kind of the era for that too, where you could kind of have that second life on DVD or rental or just playing on, like this one was on Comedy Central. We talked about Shawshank before, that played on TNT all the time. And so kind of gives these movies legs to kind of carry them past the initial disappointing box office performance.
Well, so now, so on that same note, right? So if you had TNT or, you know, Comedy Central, those were essentially our streaming services with cable, because you could put that on one weekend, you're going to get a Star Wars marathon or a Transformers marathon or something like that, right?
Yeah.
So now you don't have that. Now it's like, I don't have cable. So I'll flip through, and what Netflix does and pretty much all the streaming things do is they say, oh, here's the top movies this week. Like, you can take Office Space and they could just randomly pick it and say, oh, this is, you got to see this week. And you're going to remember, you're like, oh, I haven't seen that in a while or at all, you know, and then you're just going to watch it. So it's a brilliant move on those streaming services that they put that stuff out there.
Yeah.
So they can just take 20 movies every month and just toss them on the list, hook, line, and sinker every time, because I'll watch half of them that I see on there and I'm like, oh yeah, that's a good movie. Like, is that Top Gun? Like, I'm going to watch Top Gun again, you know, just because I can. You know, I don't sit here saying, oh, you know, I really want to watch Office Space. But if it scrolls through on top, I'm like, I'm going to watch that. Like, I haven't seen it in a while. I'm going to put that on.
It's a great point, because back in the day, like, we would just have the TV on all the time. You'd be flipping channels.
Yeah.
And you might happen upon Office Space. It's like, oh, now's the printer scene, or now's the beginning with the traffic jam, whatever. And you'd stop and watch for a while. People don't really do that anymore, because everything's streaming, and like, you pretty much turn the TV on when you have something you know you want to watch. Or you go to like Netflix, you say, oh, what's in the top 10? What's new? What just got put out? So it's kind of a different landscape as far as that goes. But yeah, these movies can still survive even in that landscape, I think.
You know what I find, though, too, is when it was on TNT, I never remember seeing a movie from start to finish, because you turn it on, it's in the middle or whatever. So when it's on Netflix or something, you put it on and I'm like, oh, I forgot this was the opening scene. Like, I only seen this part once, you know, or whatever. And then it goes through. So like I said, this movie had about a $10 million budget, only did about $12 million in the box office, because it wasn't a huge, back in 99, 134th movie money wise. Right.
Jeez.
So like I said, just pretty far down on that list. Right. But the top five movies in 99, let's see if these shock you. They probably won't. Phantom Menace was number one. Sixth Sense was number two.
Yep.
Austin Powers, I think it was The Spy Who Shagged Me. Is that the first one? I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't know. Toy Story 2 and Matrix were the top five.
That's a good year.
Right. A couple honorable mentions in 99. Big Daddy, one of my favorites. The Mummy. That was kind of, I don't want to say ahead of its time, but The Mummy was really...
That was a big one,
It was really good, I think, American Pie. So there was a lot of teenage movies that came out in that era as well.
Yeah.
And then, of course, I got to mention Varsity Blues came out in 99. Yeah. So check out episode 2 of The Double Take. good movies in 99. I mean, there was not a lot of sequels, as I just mentioned, Toy Story 2. But we weren't in that Marvel comic. We didn't quite get to that
yet. Yeah.
You know what I mean? So you had these standalone movies that were just good movies. It was a good time for movies, I think, in the 90s. You know, you take away that maybe some bad acting and bad graphics, you know, or whatever. But otherwise, like, you had a lot of good actors come out of the 90s that are still working actors today. All right. Well, speaking of, I mean, we started touching upon Mike Judge a little bit, right? So Scott gave us a little background on him.
I'm a big Silicon Valley fan. HBO show.
Did he do that show?
Yeah, he made that also.
Okay.
He's done a bunch of things. He did King of the Hill. I haven't seen the movie Idiocracy, but I know a lot of people love that. But for me, Silicon Valley is my favorite of his.
I do love that show, actually.
It's really interesting with Mike Judge, because like, you can look at the films he's done, and there's a lot that he's done as like a voice actor or just like a cameo appearance. And he's really done a lot, not just as, you know, a writer and director, but a lot as an actor, too. It's kind of interesting. And I got to tell you, like I was saying earlier before we started recording, I listened to the episode you all did on the Shawshank Redemption. And I'm always impressed by like people who know a lot about movies and, oh yeah, this director directed this movie and this, you know, person was in this movie and like just the backstory, which I don't know. So I'm going to like fall on my sword here. Y'all might laugh at me. But first of all, I've seen Idiocracy. I had no idea that Mike Judge did that, even after seeing the movie. And I just like this week when I was reading some stuff about Office Space, because I knew we were going to record this, I was like, oh, he did Idiocracy. I thought that Mike Judge wrote and directed Dodgeball. Have you seen Dodgeball?
I have, and we'll get into a couple of the actors are in that.
Right, yeah.
But Gary was he Cole involved?
No.
He wasn't, as far as I know. Okay.
Totally. Because I remember watching the movie, and I was thinking, I saw, who was it? Was it Stephen Root, I think, is in there, and Gary Cole. And I was like, oh, this must be another Mike Judge movie. This is after I'd seen Office Space, right? And up until like 2 days ago, I had thought Mike Judge created Dodgeball.
That's understandable, though, because a lot of times you'll see a director and certain actors will keep working together on multiple projects, so... I get it.
And even like the comedy, even like the style is a little bit similar. Like you could totally see Mike Judge saying, oh, instead of making fun of offices, I'm going to make fun of this whole like gym fitness culture, right?
Yep.
The like Hollywood, you know, flashy gyms. But yeah, I just found out that no, Mike Judge was not involved in that movie at all.
Great movie though. Love Dodgeball.
Yeah. We might talk about that at some point.
That might go on the list. I knew the Beavis and Butthead piece with him, but I didn't dive too deep into it. I didn't realize that he did Silicon Valley. That's pretty cool.
Yeah, I was never a huge Beavis and Butthead guy back in the day. I watched a little bit here and there just because it was sort of like a phenomenon. Like we said, like it was like the kids should not be watching this. And I was in like middle school, I think, when that came out. So it was like, oh, you're doing something subversive by watching Beavis and Butthead. But Silicon Valley was kind of the touchstone for me. But I will say Office Space is number one, even above Silicon Valley for me. I've loved this movie for a long time. So
just to get back to Beavis and Butthead for a minute, too, that also came out at a time where you probably had the Cartoon Network, which was aimed more for like younger kids, but you couldn't just turn a TV on and watch whatever you wanted, whenever you wanted. So if you came home after school, so that 3 to 4 o'clock, 3 to 5 o'clock range, like that's when MTV was at its biggest because you get home from school, you flip it on. So that's why I think people watched it just to have it on in the background. So whether you paid attention to every episode or not, you just, you know, you want to do the voices. You're like,
yeah.
You know, so that to me, it's fun because everyone's mimicking that because we're all a bunch of idiots when you're teenagers, right? So it just became
I was
fun.
A dork. I came home from school and I would watch Saved by the Bell. I don't know if I should admit that.
Was that on after school? I thought that
it was always, yeah.
That was a Saturday morning show for a while, wasn't it? Maybe the reruns?
Maybe reruns, yeah, I don't remember.
You know, that's because I'm older than you. So initially that's it was true, a Saturday morning show. You got the syndicated show.
Yeah. You know what? I always equate Beavis and Butthead with, I feel like it was the same time as like Mortal Kombat when everybody was clutching their pearls about that coming out and like the violence in video games.
Oh, yeah.
And then you had all the crazy stuff that Beavis and Butthead did. It was like kind of that era where like now it seems tame to us in 2024. But back then it was like, oh, this is the worst thing we could show our children. We can't let them get their hands on this.
Yeah.
You said something interesting too, just a minute ago, like about how we can like relate Beavis and Butthead. People could relate to that. People were like, oh yeah, I was a little bit like that when I was, you know, that age. Or we knew, like, and I've even heard was in some interviews with Mike Judge, people will say like, we all knew somebody who was like that in middle school. Right.
Yeah.
Like, or we were that person. Right. So, and I think that's also in Office Space. One of the things that makes the movie really appealing and the characters appealing is it's not hard to see ourselves, a little bit of ourselves in some of those characters, you know?
Yep.
Like one thing that I think Mike Judge does really well is he notices some things, like these little embarrassing scenarios and moments, right? Things that make us really uncomfortable, like uncomfortable in our own skin, like a little bit awkward.
Yeah.
Not like the you're at a fancy wedding and your pants fall down on the dance floor kind of thing, right? Not that kind of embarrassing. Just the more subtle things. He like turns them, he like blows them up into these total caricature, like absurd situations, which makes it like easy to laugh. Like it's kind of like you can laugh at we can laugh at ourselves a little bit, right?
Yeah.
Or just laugh at how ridiculous those situations are. And I think that's one of the things that makes his stuff really good is he's good at that, right?
Yeah.
He's really good at doing that particular thing. And it gives his humor like a particular flavor.
That's his taste. That's how he directs. And that's the ability of a director to emphasize those things, you know?
Yeah, it's like the one scene, like anybody who's seen the movie remembers the scene with Drew, when we first meet Drew.
Okay.
When he walks up, he's like, hey, you hear about the party, right?
Yeah.
I'll take that new chick from logistics. And you're like, even back then when this film was made, right, what he's saying is like, that's totally inappropriate. You're not going to say that in the office, right? He doesn't care. He's just totally oblivious. But like everybody else, Peter and Samir and Michael are like, oh my God, did he just say that?
Yeah.
You know, and like I think we can all relate to being this in a scenario where like, yeah, he just said that. I really don't know how to react to that, right?
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
That's the exact kind of thing that Mike Judge is really good at, like, at doing, you know?
Just because it's inappropriate doesn't mean it doesn't happen all the
time.
Yeah. It might not be talked about, but yeah, he kind of puts it front and center.
Yeah.
It definitely happens. You know, it definitely happens. But nowadays, the difference is one of those guys gets offended and they go into HR saying, he's talking about O-Face.
Yeah.
You know, I'm going to report him, you know?
Yeah.
All right, so this movie stars Ron Livingston. pretty much, even now, like, I don't want to call him an unknown because he's been in a lot of things, but he's not going to blow you away with his acting. But for this particular role, perfect candidate.
Right? Yeah.
He's just, he's your everyday nobody who's just, yeah, you know, I'm going to relate him a little bit to, as I say, he's a nobody. I don't mean to insult, I'm going to say more like a Pete type character, but Pete's not a nobody by any means, but Pete's just that guy that he's just going to come in, he's going to do his job, not buck the system, so to speak. And that's where this guy comes in, and he's just, hey, you know, I'm going to do my job every day. And here's, you know, it's boring, it's dreadful until he gets, you know,
until
he snaps. Yeah, yeah. Yeah. So, but I like Ron Livingston as an actor. I saw him first in Swingers. Like, he was in Swingers a little bit. I don't know if you guys have caught the show. And this is, I was talking about Netflix when they spit shows across. There's a show called Loudermilk.
I know he's in it, and I've seen his face advertised with it, but I haven't actually seen it.
I watched out this 3 seasons, and I couldn't stop watching. He plays, he's an alcoholic, recovering alcoholic, like, and he runs an AA meeting. And he's just an asshole in this movie, and he doesn't care. You know, but that's
to check it out.
That's what makes it great. Yeah, you'll be hooked in the first episode.
Just the fact that he was in it made me think I should put this in the queue.
Yeah, he's so cynical, and he just doesn't care, and he just tells people the truth. Check it out. Check out Loudermilk. This is pretty good. I thought it was a new show when I looked it up, and I was like, oh, this was from a couple years ago, but it's still worth it. It's worth the watch, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, but he's shown up in good things before. He was in Band of Brothers, the HBO World War II limited series, I guess you call it. He was really good. He's in The Conjuring. I know, Mark, we always talk about horror movies and not your thing. You probably haven't seen it. I don't know if you are into horror movies, Scott. No?
I haven't seen that one.
Yeah, he's just the father in it. All kinds of craziness happens, possession kind of movie. But yeah, he's one of those guys you're always happy when he shows up. But he's like you said, he's not like a big star. He's usually not like front and center, big guy on the movie poster. But yeah, in this movie, he's the perfect just kind of worker schlub that just we can all identify with and relate to.
Yeah, he does a really good job in the role. And it's interesting, like, little behind the scenes trivia. The producers wanted them to bring in some more big names. And this is shortly after Good Will Hunting became so popular.
Yeah, yep.
They were actually wanted to bring in Matt Damon and Ben Affleck.
Yep, I read
one
that.
One or both,
can't
right?
believe that. It's crazy. Can't even picture it.
Yeah, and like thinking about putting one of them in the role of Peter, which would have made it a totally different movie, right? And I think, yeah, like Ron Livingston is actually, I would almost say, like, better for the role than one of them would have been. As amazing as they are as actors, right? Like, not taking anything away from them as actors. But I think Ron Livingston is almost like the perfect person for the role.
I think a lot of times it's tough because you want to get a movie star. It puts people in the seats. They're, like, someone like Matt Damon is like a great actor. He's always good in whatever he's in. But like, you kind of have that association with him already. Like, if you just watch Good Will Hunting, you're going to carry something into this movie with it, which may or may not work, or at least it'll change the way this movie works. So, like, Ron Livingston, I don't know. Swingers, I think, was before this, but other than that, I don't know what else he was in. So you're kind of getting a blank slate, and it's like, okay, this is what he became known for because he embodied this character so well. So it's not always a good idea to have the star in your movie, especially something like this that was so low budget. Like, we'll get into it. Like, Jennifer Aniston is kind of the only known person, known quantity at that time. She was right in the middle of Friends. And I know they wanted some kind of star power in it that they could have. But yeah, having Damon, I would have liked to see it. It would be interesting. But yeah, it would be a totally different movie.
So she filmed all her parts in like 2 weeks. So she that had like sense. A six-month window.
It's not a huge
film.
Role.
No, it's not. But I'm glad she was in it. I'm thankful that
yeah.
we got,
oh, yeah, she's great.
We got Jennifer Aniston. You know, this was like, I don't want to say like her prime, but this because it was kind of the beginning of her career.
Yeah, I forget the years. I looked it up. I think she was like 4 or 5 years into Friends, so she was like pretty big time at this point, and it still had a few years to go. But yeah, like I watched a little bit of Friends here and there. That wasn't my favorite show. I was always a Seinfeld guy. But yeah, like I kind of associated her with Office Space for the longest time because I wasn't big on Friends, and I watched this movie so often that like even though she has a smaller part, like it was like, oh, Jennifer Aniston, yeah, from Office Space.
Yeah, of course, yeah. Like, easy on the eyes, like she's doing good. Like, so Friends was from 94 to 04, right? So
that
she,
right.
You know, so she had a good 10-year run there and a good show. Did you know that she played Jeannie Buehler on a TV show version of Ferris Bueller's Day Off?
You know what? We talked about it in the Ferris Bueller podcast, and then I forgot about it while we were doing this because one of the guys, the Tom, the one that gets blasted by the car in the movie, Tom Smikowski. He plays Rooney in the Bueller TV show. And I took that note down, but I forgot about Aniston being Jeannie, yeah.
Nice. Yeah, I've never seen that. I'm going to have to check it out.
We need to search it up, yeah. This is a cultural artifact. It could be interesting.
I saw there's a movie poster, and I'm like, oh, there she is. I mean, that was from 1990, so.
Nice.
Her character's really interesting in this movie, too. I noticed it even more watching the movie just to prepare for today. She's, in a way, she's kind of like, she's the kind of person that you would meet, and she doesn't come across Joanna, the character in the movie. Not like somebody who's going to come across as like a brilliant, like genius, right? Yeah. Like in some ways, she's kind of similar to Peter in the beginning, where she's like, she doesn't really like her job. She doesn't like her boss, but she's kind of afraid to stand up for herself.
Yeah, kind of thing. Just going with it.
But she's also like the voice of reason. She's like the smart person in the room in a lot of the scenes. Like when she's talking with Peter about like, so this is stealing, right? So what you did is stealing. And he's like, no, it's not. Yeah. And she's like, okay, explain to me how this is not stealing. Or like with the whole, like when they're talking about, you know, Lumberg and like, and she's like, why does it matter who I was with before we met, right? Like she's laying down these really like sensible arguments for things, or like challenging Peter in this really sensible way. And it's just really funny to see her kind of like this, I don't know. She's kind of, it's interesting. In an interview, she described herself as kind of like a stoner chick in the movie. Like that's how she described the character. So it's kind of interesting to see her, and you can kind of see her as this like stoner chick working at the restaurant. But also in so many scenes, she's like the voice of reason, right? She's the smart person in the room. Really good job by Jennifer Aniston.
Because Peter just, the pendulum swings. Once he kind of snaps, he has the hypnosis thing. He obviously takes everything way too far, and it's funny. It's a satire on the whole workplace thing. But like, he's just going in, he's wrecking the office. He's not showing up to work on time. He's throwing fish on his TPS reports. He's doing all these ridiculous things you would never try to do or get away with. And the couple scenes he has with her, it's like, okay, back to reality. It's like, wait, you, like you said, like, so there's this money that's not yours and you're taking it. How is that not stealing?
right.
But yeah.
So my favorite role for her is probably Just Go With It. The movie she did with Adam Sandler.
Okay.
In Hawaii. I mean, that's a great movie anyway, I think. I like her role in that movie, but that's when I think of Aniston, that's my role. Everyone else goes to Friends if you watch Friends, but you know, I'm with you. I was more of a Seinfeld person. I didn't watch every episode of Friends. I'm not doing any Friends trivia.
I like her in this era though. Like this is like a little more the girl next door kind of persona she's got. I feel like most of the things she's in now, she's kind of like got like a harder edge. She's like kind of this badass like girl boss, like she's usually kicking people in the face or like talking harshly to him, like, which is, I still like her in things. Like, I don't know if you guys have seen Office Christmas Party. I went with TJ Miller's in that one. And she's TJ Miller's, I think, older sister. And she's just like total better. She's in Horrible Bosses. All these movies, she's like you don't mess with her. And that's, I like that. But yeah, this era of like, she's sweet. Obviously she's beautiful. And she's the voice of reason.
Scott, your take on it is actually interesting because she around the same time, like she had this run where she was doing Friends. She only had a little bit of time to film movies, but she was in. Did you see Rockstar when she was?
With Mark Wahlberg. A long time ago.
So very similar. Like that's a good way to put it because she was kind of a voice of reason in that as well. But then she was in Bruce Almighty. You've probably seen that. She didn't do a lot of like rom coms. Like there was some, but not as many as you might think for someone like her. You know,
she's in one with Vince Vaughn. I can't remember the name of it. The Breakup, was it?
The Breakup, yeah.
Yeah.
But that was a great movie, too. That was some good prime Vince Vaughn in that as well. But between, like, Horrible Bosses. You ever watched The Morning Show?
I haven't. I've heard it's the worst thing going, so I haven't.
I mean, it's good. It's been on for a couple of years. I haven't watched it either. But she's in that, and I think a similar character, like you were saying. Like, she's not the fun-loving, you know, like, oh, girl next door who you want to be with. She's more of the hard, edgy boss, you know, that you'd still be with.
I will say the people that have told me it's the worst thing ever, they watch it religiously and they love it.
Right.
So maybe you watch it just for that train wreck effect.
Yeah, of course. Beyond her, there's really not a lot of big names in here. Maybe now, like, people that have done things, like, they have careers, right? But not enough to sell this movie.
Yeah, at the time, she was the only real known quantity. And everybody else, we'll get into a lot of the side actors, like they've been in a couple, like two or three kind of iconic roles since then. But this is kind of their first thing they really got noticed in.
So David Herman, he was Michael Bolton.
Yeah.
Right.
I couldn't find a real name.
I couldn't find anything else that he did that stood out to me. Like he's more of a voice actor.
Yeah, a lot of voice work on animated things. He was on King of the Hill with Stephen Root, like we said.
I guess he went to high school with Jennifer Aniston.
Yeah, I saw that in the research too.
Yeah. So maybe that's how he got that role or how she, I don't know.
I think he was on Mad TV, which yes. I didn't watch that much. I don't know much about him in that.
Yeah,
in that
I was
show.
More an SNL guy in that era.
Yeah, but I think that may have had, you know, had what he was known for at the time and may have played a role in him getting that.
AJ, he plays Nahir or whatever in the
Naga work here anymore.
Yeah. I see he had some TV appearances and a whole lot of nothing. A working actor, I think he had like 100 credits or something on IMDb, but again, nothing you'd know him for. You know, probably some side roles or bits and pieces here
and
there.
Yeah, he shows up every once in a while. But yeah, this is always the one I associate with him.
It's funny, too, because he did such a good job with the accent. Like, apparently they chose that really carefully, like what accent he was going to have, and he practiced it. And I was just watching – I actually still have a DVD player, so I was watching the Office Space DVD.
Nice.
You're the one.
And yes. And the special features on the DVD, and they're doing interviews with the cast members. And it's really weird and wild to see him – without the accent and hear him talk.
Oh,
without
I haven't
accent.
Even seen that.
Like, nice. Whoa, that's yeah. I can see.
I did
the
read
same
about
person.
It. Yeah, because he's Indian, I believe, but they made him the character Jordanian, I think. So he worked with a dialect coach and everything to get it down. It's pretty interesting.
I think he grew up in Chicago, so he's just got like a total normal
Indian American. Yeah,
U.S. accent, right? Like,
yeah.
And
that's funny.
And apparently, too, he was a hip hop producer, or
I know about the breakdancing. He said something like he had a breakdance crew, and so he just kind of did that off the cuff at that scene.
Yeah, and like they really wanted him to do that or to keep it in, right? And he's like, no,
it's
you
so
don't
random,
want
but I bust out laughing every time. Yeah, I see that. And he's like, really good. You can tell he knows what he's doing.
Yeah, and it ends up just being a perfect for that character, for Samir's character, right? Like, because you see him, Samir is kind of just like this nerdy software engineer type guy, very serious about things. That's I think the thing about Samir is he's often just the guy who's really serious about everything, really intense about everything. And then they're all drinking and he just busts out this breakdance move, right? And it's like, oh my God, that just so makes his character so much better, right?
Yeah, his answer to the what would you do if you had $1 million? He's like, well, I would invest 50% in mutual funds and give the other 50% to my cousin who's really good with money. He's like, that's not the point of the question.
My favorite character in this is the neighbor Lawrence.
Oh, yeah, he's amazing.
So Diedrich Bader, however you pronounce his name. Another character actor, like spot actor here and there, did a lot of voices, but he was on the Drew Carey Show. That's when I first saw him, where I thought he was funny. But, you know, to me, he feels like he's like Roy Kent. You know what I mean? Like, he's here, he's there, he's every fucking where, you know what I mean? Like, he's just...
He hears you through the wall.
Yeah, like, he's
chiming in.
He's, but just like, I'm saying in general, like, with his movies, like, he just shows up in these different scenes of like, a bunch of movies. I mean, he's got over 200 appearances in, like, TV shows, movies, voices, whatever. So, he's just got a pretty distinct way about him. Like, he's not going to lead a movie somewhere, he's not going to star in anything.
Yeah. But, well, that's why everybody in this movie, it's like, they're not the stars, other than Jennifer Aniston, and like... You throw in like 8 people that are just really super funny character actors, and that's kind of how you get the magic here.
Pretty good chemistry between the cast, too, which is good. But I think kind of rounding it out a little bit was, I think you guys probably love this guy, Gary Cole, who's Lumberg. I mean, he's in a bunch of things. You mentioned Dodgeball earlier.
He's in Veep is amazing. Go ahead.
Talladega Nights is, Bobby's dad. So he plays a pretty good, like, idiot.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah, he was pretty good. I mean, do you ever have a boss like that? That's just like that overbearing.
I did. You know? Yeah. Former life back when I lived in New York. Yeah, I worked at a magazine, and me and the boss didn't get along so well. He had a lot of the same qualities. didn't walk around in suspenders holding a coffee mug all the time. But yeah, a lot of similarities.
I've never had a boss exactly like him. I will maybe tell this story later, but I did actually give a copy of the DVD Office Space to my boss one time and said, here, you should watch this, which might not be what
a
lot of people would
do. That sounds like a bad idea.
Yeah. Tell a story. Yeah, I can tell a story later if you want. But
passive aggressively being like, don't be this guy. <again." laughs>
No, it was the thing about Gary Cole, I think is interesting, and Stephen Root is, so Office Space is based on a cartoon called Milton.
Yes.
That Mike Judge created, right? In Milton, it's the main characters are Milton, right? The nerdy dude in the office.
Stapler guy.
Stapler guy. And then the boss, right? Which I don't know if his name was Lumberg in the cartoon or what. But both of those voices were voiced by
Mike Judge, right? Yeah.
And so the thing I think that really made, one Gary Cole and Stephen Root those roles is they came in and like really apparently were like really inspired by and built on the characters that Mike Judge had created and the voices that Mike Judge had created, and then kind of like added their own spin to it.
Yeah.
And that was like when they're like, all right, you guys have to play. You got to play Lumberg and you have to play.
Yeah, I read Milton. That Stephen Root, like he really made the voice like weirder, like lispier, stranger. Mm-hmm. And what was it Gary Cole did the we're going to need like that. Oh, that's yeah. what got him that role, being yeah. able to do that.
I watched the movie with closed captions on. So then you can really see the things that Milton says, mm-hmm. you know, because you don't always hear it.
It's hard to pick up otherwise, yeah.
So closed caption, and he makes a lot of references about setting the building on fire.
Yeah.
He's like, I'll burn the building down, and you will never know it was me. Like, he just goes on. It's funny.
I was told that I could listen to my radio.
At a reasonable volume.
Yeah. Between 9 and 11.
It's so funny. That's in the early scene. It's the early movie. It sets the tone so well. Like, Peter, he gets through the traffic jam where he's going slower than the old man with the walker. So you already see his frustration building. He gets there. It's the TPS reports. Everybody's asking him the same thing. Mm-hmm. He hears the secretary just a moment, like five times in a row, just obviously just droning on and making him crazy. And then, of course, is Milton just like anybody that's worked in an office has like that character that like they talk too much. They want to be your friend too much. It's like, leave me alone. Just get in your cubicle, get in your office and get out of here. So, yeah, this movie, I think it does such a great job of just putting you in Peter's shoes right off the bat. Like within the first 10 minutes, you're like, all right, I get it. This place sucks. It's horrible. And let's see how this guy can deal with this now.
So, yeah, Stephen Root, we talked about, like he's another one of those character actor types. Like he does pretty good. Like he just transforms himself into these characters that he plays. I mean, when you think about him as Milton and then you think about him in Dodgeball, not too much of a stretch, but he's not playing Dodgeball. You know what I mean? Yeah. That's for sure. Right. But I don't know what else.
Did he do dodgeball training for Dodgeball?
Right. Like, I doubt it.
But yeah, he's Fuchs in Barry. I don't know if you guys watch Barry, and it's such a totally different role. He's like,
yeah,
essentially like the handler for Bill Hader, who's like an assassin, a hitman. And it, like, it's a dark comedy. There's a lot of comedy to it, but it's so much different than Office Space. It's so much different than his character of Milton. So yeah, he's good in anything he's in, but I've kind of come to identify him more because he's almost unrecognizable as Milton. He's got the big, thick glasses, the hair matted down. Like, you see a picture of Stephen Root, you're like, wow, I can't believe that's the same guy. Mm-hmm. So for me, he's kind of become Fuchs over time.
I think that shows, like, what a good actor you can be. Like, you take someone like Gary Oldman, you know what I mean? Different ends of the spectrum, I think, but same idea. Like, they just transform their bodies and everything, and that's what makes them great. It's not, you know, you see Tom Cruise, like, in every movie, except maybe one, like he looks like Tom Cruise.
Yeah,
you know what I mean. Like
Tropic Thunder,
right? But I mean, when you take, and I'll use like Gary Oldman as an example. Like, I love when an actor can go. You can be Drexel in True Romance, and then you can be
Churchill?
Was he a Churchill? Yeah, and then but then you're also you know in the Batman, and you're you know the Commissioner, and it's like. Yeah, so it's just kind of cool. Like, I love when an actor can do that. So Milton's very similar. Like,
yeah, and Milton, like, he's such a funny character, and it's just so entertaining to watch that I think, like, you're totally right, Mark. It's easy to not realize how much talent you're seeing that actor.
Oh, yeah.
To make that role work, right? Like any of us, sure, we can sit here and I can imitate the voice, right, and everything, but actually pull that off in a movie playing that role. I was again watching in the interview with Stephen Root in the on the DVD. Yes, I do have a DVD player. He was saying how the glasses he was wearing were so thick that he actually had it like he couldn't see them. He was wearing contact lenses under the glasses, and even then, like, he had no depth
just
perception.
Just to make up for the glasses.
I think so, yeah. It sounded like it. Like, just to make up for the glasses, he had to wear contact lenses so he could see. But even then, he had no depth perception. So, like, any scene where he has to reach out, like, where he has to reach out and grab the door to Lumberg's office, he had to, like, practice that
he's
so he would know where to grab because he had no depth perception.
They really
so,
are like, the thickest glasses you've ever seen. I want to know the prescription on that.
I love it.
But, yeah, like, amazing talent to pull off a role like that. And you like, that's kind of the cool thing about watching movies. You can totally get into the movie and just enjoy the acting and then step back and go, oh, wait a minute. Like, that was really hard to do, you know? And I think that's a good example.
Yeah. And it's so smart on Mike Judge's part. Like that, like you said, he was the main character of the comic and the short animated thing that they made. And then to make the movie and be like, okay, maybe an hour and a half of this guy front and center might not work. So we're going to keep him in. He's very important. But he's like a side character, and we're going to build the story around these new characters we create, and it's pretty magical, the end result.
The other character in here that you see everywhere was John C. McGinley.
Yeah.
So one of the Bobs. I love him in a lot of things. Like, he does just the right amount. you know, he can be funny, he can be serious, he can be an asshole.
Yeah.
You know, like, he's a good fit. Terrence and I talk a lot about what makes a good movie is the supporting cast, and that's what makes a movie like this. So when you see someone like him come in, I don't know if you've ever seen, there's a movie that he's in, it's from 94, it's called Surviving the Game, and it's a movie with, it's got Ice-T in it, so it's him and Ice-T. What they do is Ice-T is this homeless guy, and they pull him off the street, and they say, hey, we're going to bring you into our group, and they go like in the mountains somewhere, right? They get on a plane, they go to this thing, and they feed him, and they're talking to him, and then the next morning, they're like, okay, now run. And then they give him like an hour head start in the middle of the woods.
Oh,
and
just like Most Dangerous Game type of
stuff? So I was thinking Most Dangerous Game.
Yeah. And then they hunt him. You know what I mean?
Jeez, all right.
So it's Ice-T being like, what the hell's going on? Like, he doesn't know that, you know. So there's like four or five hunters, like, you know what I mean? They're just like
he's one of the guys hunting
rich
him,
doctors.
McGinley?
Yeah, yeah, like doctors or dentists or whatever. It's a cool movie from that era. And I think there's other movies that maybe similar, you know, Hunger Games, for example, might be part of that,
yeah,
right? The concept was really good. And
he probably even, I mean, maybe Stephen Root, like we talked about Barry, is a different kind of tone. But like more than any of the other actors in this, like he's been in some serious, really serious roles, McGinley. He's been in that. He was in Platoon.
Yep.
He was in Point Break, which I know we're probably going to talk about at some point. But like most people know him from Scrubs, like a sitcom, like he's Dr. Cox in Scrubs. So he's the real Scrubs chameleon that he could do like super funny, super serious, everything in between. He's another guy, just anytime he pops up, I'm always happy to see him.
Perfect role for him in this, too.
Yeah.
You know, it's great.
Yeah. It's wild to see how he plays that character, the Bob, of like, in one minute, he's being really friendly and, you know, hey, yeah, you know, easygoing. And then, but he's always on the verge of just snapping and losing it flying into a constrained rage, right?
Yeah. Like, he's there to fire everybody. You got to remember, that's the reason he's there in the first place.
Yeah. And some of his lines and like even his motions are just like so good and so well timed. Like, what is it you'd say you do here? Like, it's just so good the way he pulls some of that off.
Yeah, the scene where he's interviewing Michael Bolton and he's just going off on what he's like, I got to confess, I'm just a fan of his whole catalog.
Yeah,
for me, it doesn't get any better than when he sings When a Man Loves a Woman. So good.
I wonder if how much that was ad lib too. Like he just said, say something funny about this.
It might have been,
like,
yeah.
It could have been. Anyway, so we started talking about like the opening scene in this movie a little bit. You know, he's in traffic, he's getting like, how many, like, we've all done that. We've all switched to the wrong lane.
Oh, yeah.
And just like, son of a bitch, like, ugh, you know, it's just so mad, you know. But the frustration that kind of, that builds up in this, you know what I mean? Like, it's awesome because he's between the traffic and, like I said, the person talking, and then you get the radio on. He's like, I got to get out of here. Let's go to Chatsky's. And,
he's
you
been
know.
At work for like 30 seconds. He's like, I got to get out of here.
And the doorknob shocking him, right? Like
that
one
he
little
sees it, he's
tiny
just waiting,
thing.
Hovering over it. Yeah.
And then it gets him anyway.
Yeah.
I love the continual beatdown of some of these terms. Like the TPS reports is a whole thing.
Yeah.
You know, the case of the Mondays. I feel his pain. Like you just say it once and it's like, okay, you know.
And the fact that the secretary or whoever says it to him in the office and then he goes to the restaurant and this guy again is like, sounds like somebody's got a case of the money. It's like, God, I just want to punch that guy in the face.
That's one of my favorite lines from the movie that Dietrich Bader pulls off so well. Like, that's just an example of him doing that character really well, is when Peter goes, hey, when you're at work, does anybody ever ask you if you've had a case of the Mondays? And the Lawrence is just like, just the way he does, he's like, no. Oh, hell no, man. I think you get your ass kicked for saying something like that.
It kind of builds up.
It just builds, and then he just matter-of-factly, no, I think you get your ass kicked for saying something like that. But it's just like so good the way he does that.
I love Lawrence. Lawrence is by far my favorite character.
Hey, Peter, man. You
know? Hey, man. But then they go to, the Chotskys is nice. That's like a spoof of, you know, Fridays, Applebee's, like a lot of the things. Fridays has the flair. Fridays is what they call the if you ever work at a Fridays, it's called flair. Yeah, nice spin on the restaurant thing, but I thought it was weird. It was probably, what, 9 in the morning?
Yeah, they're even open. I guess they got a little, like, Denny's incorporated, too, or maybe they do breakfast or they can go there just for coffee.
You've gone out to eat, right? So there's that overhyped server everywhere.
Geez, yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, hey, you want some sliders? You want this? Like, I just want coffee. You know what I mean? Like, read the room, bro. You know what I mean? Like, come on. But anyway, so the TPS report thing, I think that's probably one of the most, like, quoted parts of this. At least for me it was.
You know, I went the longest time. I assumed, like, I haven't been in the technology field or like the real corporate world like that, I always assumed TPS reports were a thing and everybody like could relate to them because they've dealt with them if they've had that job. That's not even a thing. He just made that up for the movie,
yeah.
Apparently.
Yeah. There's apparently like a technical protocol standard or something. Like it actually, TPS does stand for something.
Oh, okay.
But there's no such thing as a TPS report, right?
Okay.
That's not like, yeah. I always thought it was like TP toilet paper, right? Like some play off of that. Maybe that's where it was.
But that's become such an iconic thing now just because of this movie.
Terrence, are you going to make your own jump to conclusions, Matt, when we're done here?
Listen, you got to have a great idea, like the guy with the pet rock. I love Samir. We talked about him. He's just like, it's a terrible, terrible idea.
There's so much, like this movie is so, it's so quotable in that sense, right? I hadn't watched it in a little bit, so rewatching it to, you know, for the podcast was awesome. Like everything else, I forget how much I enjoyed it for lines. And I'm like, I almost want to watch it in a room with three or four people. You know what I mean? Like I want to do this podcast one day, like watching it live and just kind of Mystery Science Theater and the
that
movie.
That would be fun.
You know,
yeah,
we have to pause it, make some jokes and then keep going. Like, so reliving it was actually a lot of fun. So anyone listening, you should, if you haven't rewatched it, like definitely get back on that train. But anyway, so yeah, like, you know, getting back to Lawrence too, when he's like, oh, Lawrence, what would you do with $1 million?
Yeah.
He's like, what I do, man? Two chicks at the same time, man. he's like, do you need $1 million for that? For a dude like me? Yep.
Yeah, did you know? Say something like,
for two chicks for, like that.
The kind of chicks who would double up on a dude like me.
He's awesome.
I can make that happen.
I love the, you know, the mustache, the handlebar mustache, the hair, like everything about him is awesome.
One of the last things I read right before I finished my research for this was that the note given to him was just to play it like someone that is really into the Allman Brothers. With the look and the voice and everything. I was like, you know what? That sounds about right. He did pretty good with that.
That's awesome. So have you guys ever been hypnotized?
I've not. No. I don't know how much I believe in all that. But
no, yeah. I never have either. That's why I wasn't. I was hoping one of you had been because I was like, oh, I want to see what
I think
like.
Pete has before. We got to get him on. We'll talk to him.
He's been on both ends of the spectrum, I think, too. Like
he's done the hypnotizing.
But I love when he goes to see the hypnosis, right? Hypnosis? Is that the right?
Hypnotist.
There you go. And he's like, every day I wake up, it's worse than the day before. So today is now the worst day of my life. You know, it's like.
And the hypnotist, who like is supposed to be a professional and like he's there to help, he's like, wow, that's messed up.
Right.
I love that line.
And you see like Anne, his girlfriend, sitting next to him like with this look of kind of like almost like disgust on her face. Like, oh my God, that's horrible.
I love when he's talking about his girlfriend and he's like, I think she's cheating on me.
And everybody is
everyone's
like,
yeah, I get that feeling too. He's like, what? Like, why would you get that feeling? Yeah. I don't understand.
I don't know, man. She just looks like the kind of girl who would like artists. Like, he doesn't even say it.
But yeah, then you got the, the 15 messages from Lumberg.
Yeah. 17. Don't sell them short. 17. Yeah.
Well, one of those was from, no, one of those wasn't from Anne. No, that was
later after he woke up, right?
Yeah.
But that must have been fun for him because we were talking about Gary Cole doing the voice.
Yeah.
Like just to do that take.
Hearing it over and over, but just like slightly different. Yeah. Yeah.
So it's a regular hours today.
I stepped out just in case you called. I wanted to check back here for the 12th time. Like, take the hint.
I like when he goes over to, like he goes to the restaurant and asks Joanna out. And like she's like, oh, party of one. He's like, no. Like, what are you doing for lunch? And she starts giving like the specials, you know?
Yeah.
And then he's just so cool about it. Like he has this weird confidence about him because he's still under hypnosis or whatever the term might be. And he's like, listen, I'm going to go over there and get a table. If you come, cool. If you don't, that's cool too.
Yeah.
You know? And she's just
he's
like,
so laid back.
She's intrigued at this point. Like, I'm going.
What's this guy's deal?
She's like, is that... Are you talking about Chili's or the other place?
Flingers.
Flingers.
Well, I like that they put in a real one with Chili's because tchotchkes and Flingers are just these made-up things, but they threw Chili's in too.
His whole speech talking to her when he's like, yeah, I don't think I'm going to go. You're going to quit? No, I'm just not going to go. You know, what about your bills? Yeah, I don't want to pay those anymore. You know, and she's just like, okay, this guy's some kind of loser. And then he's like, do you want to watch Kung Fu? And she has this whole like Dreamweaver thing, like, I love Kung Fu, like, gotcha. You know what I mean? I thought that was really cool. Channel 39 or whatever, like, you know, like, it's awesome.
She's like, She and Jennifer Aniston plays that so well, too. She's just like,
oh, yeah,
I love Kung Fu.
Yep.
Channel 39, yeah.
Yep, I dig it. But then you get all the scenes with the Bobs where they start talking to everybody, the consultants. Every time someone when they're talking to Michael Bolton, you know, and like, you're Michael, and they hesitate, and like, really? Bolton, are you a big fan? Yeah. You know, like what? Just because I had this last name, I didn't create it because he was a fan.
You guys see that, like, years after, they did a Funny or Die sketch where the actual singer, Michael Bolton,
right,
played some of the scenes? Like, they kind of just inserted him in, like, across from the bottom.
Oh, that's funny.
Yeah, no. It was really funny. I watched it last night. It was good. But so yeah,
they had him playing that character.
Yeah, he just did the lines of Michael Bolton. So he's sitting across from the Bobs where they're asking him if you like Michael Bolton. Like, just three or four different scenes. He's bashing the printer at one point with the bat. Yeah, nice. It's pretty cool that he had the sense of humor to do that.
But yeah, even so, then Peter goes back in there, which is awesome. And I don't know if you catch him, he's playing Tetris at one point on his computer.
It's like, I'm kind of busy now.
Busy right now. Like,
come back later.
Yeah. I got a meeting with the Bobs.
Yeah.
Lumberg's like, oh, I wasn't aware of a meeting, you know.
And it's so great because he has such disregard for everything now. He drills the doorknob off so he doesn't get shocked. He knocks his cubicle down. He's dressed sloppily, but he goes in with the Bobs, and they're just completely taken with him because they've been analyzing everybody, looking for people to cut out, to fire, and he's the worst worker in the world at that point. He's not there to do any work. He's not there to listen to what anybody says, and they just fall head over heels for him. It's hilarious.
It's weird, too, because it is funny because, like, he's saying exactly all the things that you would expect are just going to get him fired,
yeah,
right? Like, you don't go and tell the consultants that. But in a way, it's also funny, too, because he is, like, being really honest. Like, that's legitimately, yeah, if you really want to know what's going on in a company, you want somebody who's going to say all that stuff, right? Like, this is – I have – yeah. What are seven bosses?
Of motivation, but
yeah, like, and that it just makes it like funny on a couple different levels. Like, yeah, there he is saying stuff, and of course, you know, in a lot of real world situations, he would just get fired for saying that. But it's also funny because, in a way, that's like perfect. It like, it's almost like their reaction is funny, but it's also like, yeah, it's really serious when they say he's a straight shooter. You know,
yeah,
that guy's got upper management potential written all over him.
I love the you mentioned like McGinley, when his mannerisms, when he's talking to him, he's going forward and back in the chair with the suspenders on. He's like, tell me that again. How's this work? Like,
yeah, he's completely captured him.
Oh yeah. Like he's enthralled with what he's saying. He's like, I can't believe this guy's being this honest with us. Yeah.
There's another thing too. I just noticed last time I watched the movie was in the background in that conference room where they're talking, right, with the Bobs.
Yeah.
It's just a small detail. It's funny, but it's a bit, there's a whiteboard in the background. It's got all this complicated flow chart on it stuff, right? And the label at the top is planning to plan.
Yeah, there's so many of those like corporate touches. When they, I think it was when they first introduced the Bobs, there's that huge sign just with like the block letters behind it. It's like, is this good for the company? It's like, nobody wants to hear that when they're working. It's like such this whole worker bee thing they got. I like how the movie just, it kind of shows you every part on the scale of like the disgruntled worker. Like you've got Peter in that moment is like just, he's totally fed up and he's just going to tell it like it is. Like Joanna at her job in the restaurant, like she's sucking it up, but she really hates it. And then you got Samir and Michael like are kind of seething. And then Milton is just like quietly, like he's basically a potential serial killer waiting.
Quietly seething, yeah.
Yeah, he's going to explode at some point. So they show you kind of the whole range of emotions that you could have as being like a disgruntled employee for one of these horrible, soulless places.
Yep.
Oh, yeah, and funny behind the scenes story too. Stan, the manager at Tchotchke's, right? Joanna's boss.
Yep.
Is played by Mike Judge.
Yes.
Which, and he doesn't, in the credits, he shows up as like William King or something like that.
Oh, really?
Actually, for some reason they didn't put his name in the credit, or he chose not to put his name in the credits. But apparently the story is that it was like last minute and they couldn't hire somebody for the role. So he stepped in and played the role, and he does it so well, right? Like that role of Stan is done so well. But it's just funny that it was almost like an afterthought for him to play the role.
Yeah, he's so good. I mean, he's only in like a scene or two. But it's like, Brian, he's got 37 pieces of flaring, and we encourage that.
I'm a big fan. I think Terrence is as well when the director shows up in the movie.
Oh, yeah.
You know what I mean? They're directing themselves, which is, I guess, weird. But, you know, they're able to just deliver, like they said, just two scenes, knock it out. See you later.
Yeah,
you
know, and honestly, I mean, if you wrote the movie, you directed the movie, you know exactly what you're looking for there.
Yeah.
If you've, I don't know, if you've auditioned a bunch of actors and they're not giving you what you want, you know what to do. You could step in. Mike Judge has showed up in things before, so he's capable. He's funny. He can deliver the line. So, yeah,
yep.
It's pretty good.
So they get into this, like, scam now where they're trying to, you know, shave a half a penny. I love how he describes it to Jennifer Aniston, where he's like, you know, when you go into 7-Eleven and there's a need a penny, you know, and you know. And he's like, it's like that, only more pennies in a bigger jar. You know, something. And then she's like, you're taking away from the kids with multiple sclerosis? No, that's the jar. We're talking the can or, you know, whatever, right? So I just thought that was funny. But the way they describe it from, like, Superman 3, if you've seen Superman 3, I don't know.
I haven't. My only association with it is from this movie that they reference it.
I also recently watched Hackers. You've seen the movie Hackers with Angelina Jolie?
Yeah, a while ago.
They do the same thing in Hackers,
really?
Too. Yeah, it's called the Da Vinci Virus in Hackers. Wow. And it's the same thing where they're shaving, like, a penny or whatever. And just over time, it goes into some other account, and then boom, millions of dollars, you know.
Sounds simple.
Sounds simple. Yeah, I'm sure there's detections against that nowadays, or else, you know, it'd be happening a lot more. But
There's a little too, like, a funny, subtle thing they put in there. And I think just because, like, the company is supposed to be a tech company, right, software company, so they may have put this in there as a joke or as a nod to software developers or something. But so the computers that they're on, and this is super nerdy. This is like, yep. If your audience wants to know what a nerd I am, you're going to find out right now. So the computers they're using are Windows computers, right? Like, even like there's a little C prompt, which is like, that's
it's a Windows thing.
Windows thing, right? But the operating system, like when you see Peter shutting his computer down or when he's loading the virus, that's actually Mac operating system. That's an old Mac operating system.
Yeah.
So it's weird. Like, it's a weird joke. It's a weird combination of, oh, yeah, we're using this old Mac operating system on which wouldn't be used in an office, right, on Windows machines.
Right.
And the virus that that you're talking about, that Michael creates, is actually – it was a real Mac virus. The name of the file was actually a real Mac virus.
Oh, really? Nice.
Yeah.
You know, this movie, it kind of takes you back to that time, too, because, like, if you remember the whole Y2K thing, like, that's what Peter does. When he explains his job to Joanne, it's like they got all these lines of code, and to save space, they just use two digits, so, like, 99 instead of 1999, and that's all I do is I just change it to the four digits all day. And, like, it's so long ago. God, but I remember Y2K. Everybody was afraid it was, like, the apocalypse. Like, somehow, like, the entire, like, United States system was going to collapse because of this stupid Y2K thing. And then it passed and it was nothing and everything was fine. But it was kind of cool to go back to that.
Well, and I heard part of the reason it was nothing is because they did so much work to fix that, right?
Like, a lot of really?
Yeah, apparently it could have been a bigger deal.
Oh, geez, I thought it was more just like a false alarm. Wow, okay.
Yeah.
Good job by everybody then.
That was a funny scene too, though, when Peter was describing what he does, right? He's, you know, finally asked Joanna out and they're having lunch and he's sitting there across the table from this girl and he's describing what he does. And then, like, he just suddenly realizes that it's boring as hell. And he's like, yeah, and it doesn't matter.
I don't
he
like
just
to like talk
cuts
about
himself
my job.
Off and like, and yeah, it's really boring. I don't like to talk about it. So yeah. It's super funny.
They have the infamous printer smashing scene, which I mean, that, I don't know how many times you've relived that moment or at least, like, wanted to do just that.
So good. And this is probably a good opportunity to bring up, like, the soundtrack in this movie. It's, like, all the gangster rap they use, which is so incongruous with, like, just – it's mostly, like, these white guys with clip-on ties and sitting in a cubicle. And then they're busting out all these funny lines they got from the gangster rap. I read something that they were going to drop that. Like, I think the studio wanted them not to have that. And Mike Judge was like, all right, listen, the next test audience we do, if they don't like it, we'll drop it. And apparently they all loved it, so he's like, we're keeping it.
Yep.
But yeah, it just fits so well. They're bashing the printer, and you got that playing in the background.
Yeah, it's like Ghetto Boys and stuff in there. There's an Ice Cube song in there at one point.
Yeah, it's damn it, it's good to be a gangster.
Yeah, it played really well because, even from the beginning, you got Michael Bolton listening to gangster rap, and then, like, the black dude comes by, and he turns it down, locks his door.
And he lowers it himself, too. Like, he's starting to say a line that maybe he shouldn't say, and he kind of stops and slinks down in his seat.
And that's like one of those like awkward moments I was talking about, right? That Mike Judge is so good at picking up on. Like, you know, I mean, even if we haven't been in that exact situation, like you don't listen to rap, you haven't like turned the music down because you see a black guy walking by. And it was so funny in that scene too, because like the guy he saw was this totally unassuming, unthreatening dude. The dude was literally standing on the sides selling flowers.
Yeah.
And Michael Bolton sees him and is like, oh, gosh. And he turns down the music and he's like mumbling the lyrics.
Yeah.
And he drives by and turns it back up. But like, have you ever been driving somewhere and like you pull into a parking lot and you're blasting the heavy metal and then you see a cop? Or like you pull into your neighborhood and you see like the nice old lady who thinks you're such a nice young man and you're like blasting the, you know, you're like, oh, let me turn this down before she hears it, right? Like, it's those things that I think a lot of us can relate to, even if we've never been in that exact situation. And even though, because Mike Judge like blows it up into something ridiculous, it's like, oh yeah, I know. Like, you can feel the awkwardness a little bit because you've experienced something like
that. Yeah, there's a lot of truth in that portrayal.
Yeah, and he did. Yep. That's just one of the things I think he does really good in this movie and in other ones too.
And the one thing too, again, if you've worked in an office, you know, when they do the office cake and the awkward happy birthday. Yeah.
Right? Like, everybody's so lifeless, like, happy birthday. For Lumberg, who, of course, nobody can stand because he's so terrible.
So weird. So we would do that. Like, we have this thing at work. Like, so we have a Food Network, like, Teams chat. So when people have food around there, you know, I work in IT, right? So, like, we work for food, essentially. And so when someone's like, oh, this meeting has, you know, it's being catered outside. So, like, once the meeting's done, a lot of times they'll usually ping us and say, hey, come help yourself. There might be like Moe's or some subs or something like that. So it's like, oh, they're going to throw it away. So we get in there and get some brownies or whatever it is.
Nice.
So back in the day when I was in those big cubicles, as I was saying, same idea. Someone had cake. They'd be like a small group and then have cake. And then they'd leave it on like an end unit, an end cap somewhere in like some file cabinets. And just anyone could just help themselves to it at that point. This guy Joe I worked with, he'd be like, cake in the terracotta section, you know. So we're like, okay, then we just go over there and we get a piece of cake, and it's like that 2:30 in the afternoon kind of sugar pick me up, which was awesome. It wouldn't matter if it was 10 a.m. we're still gonna eat it, but food in the office is it keeps you going. Like, it breaks the monotony, if you will.
Yeah,
you know what I mean. But
my wife, she works from home now, but like before COVID she worked in an office, and she had so many stories about, like, they would bring in bagels or they'd have cake or something like that.
Yeah.
And she was always complaining because there'd be like somebody that brought their own Ziploc bags and they would fill up some stuff and take it home. Or like they would just run out of a meeting so they could make sure they got a piece of cake. And so I always laugh when I see this because it makes me think of that.
It happens. It's a real thing. We do it now, even at work, like when there's food out there, keep throwing back to Pete, but Pete's on that channel. You know, if we see something, he's like, hey, guys, there's donuts on
four. I feel like Pete would be Milton, though. It's so perfect, the scene with the cake with Milton, where he gets it. It's like, now, Milton, don't be greedy or selfish or whatever. So she makes him pass the cake. And he's like, last time I didn't get a piece. And of course, he's like the one guy that ends up with passing it down. He keeps passing it. And then the final piece, the guy doesn't pass it to him. And he just eats it himself. And he's the only one left without a cake. So perfect.
So, yeah, so this movie is very quotable. Very rewatchable. A lot of scenes here that we can go through. But so let's move on to categories. Was there anything unanswered in this movie? Like anything in the plot that didn't get answered to you?
I mean, I kind of wonder how Peter and Joanna ended up. Like, I feel like they probably ended up living happily ever after because they both, like, they've quit their jobs that they hate and they're in a better spot. But that's, I guess, not totally answered by the end of the movie.
No. Well, he's now working with Lawrence, like they're doing the construction job, whatever.
Demolition or whatever, mm-hmm.
He's working outside. He's happy, you know.
Yeah. What I want to know, I mean, maybe it doesn't matter in the grand scheme, but what happened to Lumberg after Initech burned down? Like, I'm sure they rebuilt and, like, maybe he stayed with them, but I could just picture him, like, having to go work at, like, Tchotchke's or somewhere and button heads because he's the same kind of guy as the manager there.
That's funny. But
I'd like to know what happened to him.
Do we know how the fire started?
That's Milton. A good question.
Like, they never show it, right?
Yeah, because, like, I think you're supposed to think that Milton did it.
Oh, it has to be Milton, right?
Because he says
I've never thought anything
so
else.
Many times.
Yeah.
But they never actually show him doing it, and you see, like, you know, when everybody's all standing around watching, you see Milton and he's like he's just being his normal self. He's not like, he looks nervous and jumpy, but he always looks nervous and jumpy, right? Yeah. So it's like, did he do it or was it just an accident? I mean, you kind of want to you're led to believe a little bit that he probably did it.
It's got to be. I refuse to believe anything else.
You refuse to believe anything else.
Milton's, but he was setting us up for the whole movie for that. So he went, because didn't he go into Lumberg's office? And that's when Peter had slipped the envelope underneath, kind of confessing to their crimes and had the money in there. And yeah, I never even considered the fact that it couldn't have been Milton. Yeah. So I got to think about this now.
Yeah, it's kind of, it's one of those assumptions you make from watching the movie. You don't really know.
Yeah.
What they could have done is maybe if it's not the DVD, Scott, I don't know. But maybe like you see him like knock something over in the basement, you know, because the light's off and all of a sudden like it catches on fire. Like, I don't know.
He did it on purpose for sure, though. I mean, he was.
Well, he does talk about it.
Not that anybody was listening to him, but...
But if you watch a closed caption, he says it at least two or three times.
Yeah, right.
He's like, I'll set this fire, you'll never know.
Set the building on fire.
Yeah.
That would be even funnier. You talk about knocking something down in the basement, right? Like, I totally buy your argument. Milton did it. Terrence, no question. But it would actually be funnier if he like did it accidentally, right? Like imagine he was down in the basement and accidentally knocked something over.
And it would be their own fault for sticking him down. They're moving around the whole movie. When at the end he's down in storage B, Lumberg is down there for some reason with sipping his coffee like, we're going to need you to take care of this rat problem. If you just want to get down on your knees, grab the spray. It's like... That would be pretty fitting if that's what led to the whole place burning down.
Yep.
There's a funny thing in that scene, too, where Lumberg is still eating his piece of cake.
Yeah, that's right.
That Milton didn't get a piece of cake, and he's talking to me, giving Milton, bullying Milton, basically, right? And he's standing next to a sign that says, no eating or drinking in this area.
Oh, I didn't pick up on that.
He's like leaning up against the sign and says, no eating or drinking, and he like takes his last bite of cake and tosses it
in the trash. And what's so great, like we didn't even mention like the whole plot point of Milton, he was supposed to be laid off like 5 years ago, but some kind of glitch in the system kept him on the payroll. He's like, well, we took care of the glitch. He's like, so you fired him? You let him? He's like, no, it'll just work itself out naturally. He's still there. And it comes up after. He's like, oh, I didn't receive my paycheck this week. And he's trying to go back and forth. So, yeah, everything bad that could possibly happen to Milton happens to Milton. So if he did, like I think, light the building on fire, I think he earned that. It felt right.
So a couple of things in this movie, like we started getting into a little bit about like these office, like nuances, if you will, you know what I mean? So like you get the manager who's overmanaging, like this movie really captures a lot of these little things. Everyone has printer problems when they're trying to print. There's always
PC load letter. What the fuck does that mean?
What does that mean? Oh, you know something funny I read? Apparently that was ad-libbed. Apparently that was improvised.
Really?
Because, David Herman? Is that his name?
Yeah.
The actor.
Michael.
Michael Bolton. He was supposed to say a couple more lines, but that actually popped up on the printer, PC load letter. Like the printer actually jammed, and he actually like apparently just like naturally said, PC load letter. What the fuck does that mean?
And they kept it
in. That wasn't his actual line.
I love it.
And then they kept it in there, yeah.
And I have, like we talk about like TPS reports maybe aren't a real thing, but PC load letter, I've seen that pop up on a printer before. And, like, obviously, instantly, your mind just goes straight to Office Space. So,
that's awesome.
It's
a real office nuance, which is what I like about it. Singing happy birthday in the office. You don't see a whole lot of that going on, but there's definitely, like, the food, as I was mentioning, in there. So a lot of little things. Maybe someone listening to a radio, like, you do get some of that.
The reasonable volume.
Between 9 and 11. The girl on the phone. You know, if you sit near someone who's on the phone.
Oh, God, I blow my brains.
Oh, man. So those are little annoyances that you just like, I got to get out of here. I'm going to go sit in a conference room.
The prevalence now of working from home, I feel like is definitely a good thing. It's removed a lot of these horrible things you have to deal with from being in an office.
Yeah. Yeah. Some of it holds up, but you know, some of it, I mean, obviously he leaned into it in this movie a little overboard in some ways, but when you think of the actor that's in this movie, is this the first movie you think of?
Right.
You know, I think Ron Livingston is probably that person.
Definitely. Yeah.
You know, for me, Jennifer Aniston is not. This isn't the first movie I think of her, but the dude who plays Milton.
Stephen Root, yeah.
Yeah, probably. I mean, I don't know if this is who you...
Yeah, for me, it's Barry for him now, like I mentioned before.
Okay.
But Ron Livingston's the one clear one. Like, yeah, he's done other things, but he's Peter Gibbons, right?
What about Gary Cole? Like, is this, you think of Lumberg, or you think of Dodgeball, or Talladega Nights? Where do you see him?
I think I might go Talladega Nights in it. Just Ricky Bobby's dad. Like, if you ain't first, you're last. Like, this is an iconic role. That is too. I don't know. It's a good question.
Okay. Anything for you, Scott? Anyone jump out as like,
I think Gary Cole for some people, it depends on what you've seen, but I think a lot of people would just instantly think of The Boss, right?
Yeah.
That'd be great.
It's close. It really is.
Like those lines.
It's so good.
The way he played it, I think, really were very iconic. I think a lot of people, when you say Office Space, for some people, that's the first thing that jumps out is Lumberg, right?
So. I would agree with that. I think he's probably, it's got to be up there. One and two, like the three movies I mentioned, that those are the only three I really know him from. Like I watched part of Veep. I don't remember him.
Oh, Veep's amazing. You know? But yeah, I remember when we started watching that and he showed up, I was like, oh man, maybe that's the answer to the question, because I didn't say it's Ricky Bobby's dad. I said it's Lumberg. Holy crap. So so maybe I just came to that realization that it is Lumberg for me.
That's what makes this movie great, is it has that lasting memory. So I was looking for any like Easter eggs, like Scott, you were mentioning the flow chart, the plan to plan thing. I think that's pretty cool. If you notice, you see at one point Peter pulls into the apartment complex. And the name of the apartment complex is Morning Wood Apartments.
No way. Yes. Is it really? Oh my God. How did I miss that?
Yeah. So I thought that was awesome. But I'm like, did I just see that? And I rewound it. And I'm like, Yep, I love it. So I don't know if that's a real sign or whatever, but.
Can't be. They had to have made it for the movie. That's so good.
Something I read about that I never noticed before, but now I can totally picture it. The sculpture in front of the Inotrobe office is a square peg going in a round hole.
Wow. Picked up on that.
For Inotech or Inotrobe?
Sorry, Inotech. Yeah, okay. You're right.
Because they mentioned the other company.
The other one's Inotrobe. He calls it Penetrode.
Oh, I didn't realize that was that.
Yeah, because you see that in the fire, like the scaffolding or whatever falls on it and knocks it down. But yeah, I hadn't picked up on that.
That's just like a microcosm of the entire company. Like, it's like, how come this doesn't work? I don't understand, you know. Oh, that's a great. If you had a pick, I know it's hard to narrow down to one. But Scott, if you had a pick, like one scene, like what's your favorite scene from this movie?
You know, I don't know if this is a related question or a different question, but like favorite line, favorite quote. I think the scene where Peter is after he's had his experience and he goes and has his first conversation with the Bobs and he's just like being totally honest about everything.
Yeah.
And that's a really, yeah, that's kind of a standout scene. And I think the one line in there that I love is, because I think so many people can relate to this, where he says, you know, it's not that I'm lazy. It's just that I don't care.
That's true. Or when they say, hey, you've been missing a lot of work. I wouldn't say I was missing it.
So good. I've used that line so many times since then.
Yeah. How about you, Terrence? What do you think about like your favorite?
That scene's amazing, and it's kind of 1 and 1A for me between that and just the very beginning. Everything from the traffic jam up until like he has to leave to go to Tchotchke's because he can't take it anymore, where he hears the secretary, he's dealing with Milton. It's like he's there for 5 minutes, and he's like, if I don't get out of here, I'm going to lose my mind. So everything that happens there, like it perfectly just sets the movie up for – just how soul-crushing this place is, and you're off from there. So along with yours, Scott, I would go with the beginning.
Nice. Yeah, and you also were saying that earlier, like how well that just builds and sets this tone of frustration. And this is Peter. This is Peter's life, right? It's just so much frustration.
Yep.
And just every little piece of that whole opening sequence, Terrence, that you're talking about, like sets that tone of frustration.
And I like that they show you Michael, the whole thing with locking his door as the guy goes by. You see Samir, he's so angry and so frustrated. He's like, mother of shit, he's just stuck in traffic. It's so good. Mark, what's your favorite?
Anything with Lawrence.
Yes.
You know, like Scott, you mentioned earlier when anyone ever say Case of the Mondays, like, no, man, no, you get beaten up for that or whatever. Like, anything with him in there was awesome. He ends every sentence with man, right? Like I just love that character. Like it's, you know, I love the small characters in a lot of these movies.
Yeah.
And he's just someone like I'd love to see that as a reoccurring character in like other movies. Like he just shows up randomly somewhere. It'd be awesome if that could be the case. But I just liked everything about him as that
Peter
person,
Man, so. Channel 5, the breast exams are on.
Breast exams, man. Woo. And when they're going over the plan and he's like, no one knows this except us.
Through
and
the wall.
Lawrence like, I won't tell anybody either, man. They're like, who the hell is that? Like, so
I think Lawrence's best through the wall moment is after they find out that everything's gone wrong and Samir and Michael leave and they're both pissed off at Peter, right? Because everything's gone to hell and it's all Peter's fault. And Peter's sitting there thinking it's all his fault. And he like knocks on the wall and says, hey, Lawrence, you want to come over? And Lawrence is like, nah, man, I don't think so. I don't want you fucking up my life.
Yeah.
He says that really quiet. He says that really quietly. Like, you got to really listen. But that's just such a good line. Yeah.
That's funny. So, yeah, so anything with Lawrence, I think, is my favorites as far as those go. But as far as like particular quotes, right from the beginning, when you first meet Michael Bolton, you know, the girl comes over and it's like, Michael Bolton? Oh, is that
my
coincidence?
Yeah, you see her face just light up.
And he says something like, it was fine until this no talent ass clown started winning Grammys, you know? And I was like, that's great too. Like that's, you know, I like that line.
So. There's so many lines in this movie. It's great. I love, we hardly talked about Tom, the one that gets hit by the car, the jump to conclusions, man. When he first meets with the Bobs, it just like sets the tone for everything because they basically hardly say anything. They're just sitting there and they let him just hang himself. They're like, what would you say you do here? And he's like, well, what was it? Like, I get the, I interface between the engineers and the customers. And they're like, well, why can't the engineers just bring the paperwork to the customers. He's like, because engineers are not good with dealing with people. And you can see, obviously, he's not either. He just explodes. So what the hell is wrong with you people? And he bursts out of there. Yeah. So
I'm a people really person. Like, can't you see that? Yeah.
He said such fear of losing his job.
Right? Yeah.
You know, he plays it overboard. It's the end of the spectrum between when Peter goes in there, you know, just two different things.
And then at the end, he's like, good things can happen. Like, just look at me. And he's got the whole neck thing and he's in the wheelchair. It's like, is this really good for you? Like, you're going to get a settlement, but like, you look like you're pretty jacked up.
Yeah. I didn't think there was any, I mean, the movie's only 89 minutes, so not a lot of bathroom break scenes. I mean,
now,
it's not anything within, drawn out.
You can't go more than 5 minutes without like a great quotable line or scene. Like,
yeah, I agree.
This movie moves. It's a real high quality content for the whole thing.
Would you give it a better title or a different title?
I like Office Space. I know one of the taglines they had for the movie was Work Sucks, which I guess could have worked as a title. But yeah, Office Space works.
Yeah, I like the title too. I think it's pretty good. So I guess Mike Judge turned down the chance to make a sequel for this. I don't know the details, but he said he didn't have a good time making this movie. I don't know how deep you guys got into that.
Yeah, it seemed like the studio was pressuring him with a lot of things. I saw there was one thing like why is Peter not smiling more? And he's like, well, this is only like the first half of the movie. Like, he's not happy yet. He hasn't undergone his transformation. So, like, I don't think the studio really got it. Like, right. They didn't know how to market it. They were pressuring him to do things that he wasn't comfortable with. So, yeah, I don't think it was a good experience. Yeah. Why maybe we never saw more of it.
Which is probably better off. I think it's one of those cases where I don't like when movies get, like, sequels get made to make money. Like, you know, Speed 2. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, they put it out there and say, oh, let's just take the name and make another couple million off the name. And it happens, and sometimes they're decent movies, but...
And this isn't the most plot-heavy movie, but it ends on a really, like, nice note. Like, Peter is working with Lawrence on the construction crew, whatever. He's really happy. He's bringing his own lunch. Like, it's just kind of honest, hard, manual labor, but it's not, like, just this corporate nonsense he's been dealing with.
Yep.
Michael and Samir are working for Intertrode now. And it's like, it's work. It's like, whatever. They're still doing... They're happy to have a job. What was the line? There's another one of... like, Samir, like, what would you be doing if you were still doing this in 10 years or 20 years? He's like, it would be nice to have that kind of job security. Went home from like, no, this sucks. We need to get out of this.
Yep.
So,
yep.
Yeah, everybody's in a good spot at the end. I like how it winds up.
You know, Scott, you mentioned earlier they tried to get Damon and Affleck on there. So a couple other people, Kate Hudson auditioned for the role of Joanna. That would have been something, I think, because at that time she was...
Almost Famous was about a year and a half later. I looked that up. That was, I think, her big
breakout.
But yeah, I could see her in that role. She's done well.
She's a firecracker. I like her. I like her. She had a lot of good string of movies, too. I guess, like, Vince Vaughn auditioned and didn't get the role.
Yeah, Owen Wilson for Lawrence, right?
I think so.
I could see that.
Because he's a good character actor, too. I think he could have pulled that off. Like, he's got the chops to do that. I love Lawrence, so I say don't touch Lawrence.
Yeah. Vince Vaughn, I love him. He's in so many funny movies, but, like, he's always kind of Vince Vaughn. Like, you kind of, like we talked about with if Damon had the role of Peter, like, you can't really get around the fact that it's Matt Damon and, like, the star power with him. Like, Vince Vaughn, like you see Diedrich Bader, however you say it, he had the mullet and the mustache. I don't know if it's – I'm assuming it's wigs and stuff. It wasn't his own he grew, but, like, he transforms a little bit. Like, I feel like it would have still been Vince Vaughn, although now I'm picturing Vince Vaughn with the mullet and the mustache. And it is very funny in my head.
Vaughn did a similar character in – was it Starsky and Hutch?
Like it was
supposed to be from the 70s, so he had a similar look.
But, okay, he could have pulled that off again.
Yeah, so he would have been all right, but I like who's in there. So I didn't really have any – like nitpicks with this movie. Like I thought that usually I can pick apart a couple scenes and be like, oh, I don't know why they would do this, but this one was just, for me, it was just a feel good.
You know, this isn't necessarily a nitpick, but one thing I didn't realize the first 10 times I've seen this movie. So you see Milton at the end, he's on the beach. And again, he's mumbling like they gave him a Mai Tai. He wanted a margarita and he's threatening to poison the guacamole. But it never really sunk into me until I started reading about the movies. Like, he got the money. Like, right. Peter put the money under the door. That never sunk in for me for some reason. Maybe it wasn't clear. I'm just dumb. But it was like, yeah, he's at this tropical resort with the money that he grabbed from the office when he went into Lumberg's office. So I thought that was a pretty cool wrinkle to wrap it up.
I thought, like, and I didn't see this when I rewatched it, but I thought at one point, and maybe they cut the scene, I thought maybe, like, he had, like, gum on his shoe and, like, the envelope was stuck to his shoe. Like, in my head, that's what was happening.
I like that.
But they never showed it. Like you said, like, you just assume.
That's canon for me now. I like that interpretation. All right.
Well, there you go. Well, gum on it. You missed that scene. He had gum on his shoe. There you go. Nice.
That's something I like about the movie, too. Like, there are some
you know, in a way, like, they're kind of making fun of some of these characters. Like Milton, he's a kind of a weird guy, and they're making, you know, jokes about that a little bit. But the people who really get dumped on in the movie are the jerks, like Lumberg, right?
Yeah.
The people who are actually being, like, jerks, right?
Yep.
And the people who, you know, the other people who are, you're kind of laughing at a little bit in the movie, but in the end, like, they're living the good life. Like, Milton's there on the beach, right? Ordering Mai Tais. And, you know, Samir and Michael, and, you know, they've got a job at Inatrobe, and okay, they're kind of in the same place, but they're okay with that, right? Like, yeah, we got a job. I like the job security. And, you know, you have Peter, who's living the dream now. He even says something about, no, you know, they ask him about going somewhere, and he's like, no, I got to meet Joanna. So he's like back with Joanna.
Yeah.
He didn't go to jail. Good thing.
Yeah.
And he's out there doing the job that he likes, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, I think any good satire, like, you need to punch up. Like, if
right.
if they were really hammering on Peter and Michael and Samir and Milton, like, you'd laugh for a little bit, but it wouldn't really resonate with people. You want to put yourself in their shoes and be like, yeah, the bosses suck. Like, let's stick it to the man. Like, that's why it works so well, I think.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Even, like, with the joke about Samir's name, it's like, to me, that's more of a joke about how people in the U.S. have a hard time pronouncing
I didn't take it as making fun of Samir.
Yeah,
it's about how stupid and insensitive people are.
Can be, right?
Because it's multiple times it happens with the Bob says it, and then the woman that comes up at first, like, right. Samir, and he's like, I don't understand why people in this country, it's not so hard to say.
Yeah, it is, like you said, they are punching up. They're definitely, like, the people who are in the beginning, like, the, you know, I mean, like, Lumberg's a bully, right? Like, he's totally, the way he treats Milton is totally not cool, and he's only treating Milton that way because he
can. And everybody, we see Peter, and too. Everybody. He's like, I'm going to need you to come in on Saturday, and you know what? Actually, we need you on Sunday, too. He's like, what the, this man needs some free time, some personal time. What are you, crazy? He's going to work 7 days a week in this place?
Yeah.
And he just says it, like, it's matter of fact. Like, there's no room for interpretation. There's no asking not to do it. It's like, yeah, I'm going to need you to come in on both those days. It's like, get out of here.
And then you see when Peter's like, oh, I got a meeting with the Bobs, I got to go. And Lumberg's like, I didn't know about that. Well, yeah, okay, I'll get back to you that later. Like, and he's the one that gets, you know, of course, he's the one that in the end is really, we don't see the results, but obviously he's the one that's getting.
Overall, this movie is a total classic movie, completely rewatchable. You know,
no, it was great to return to this one. I've probably seen it 15 times, but yeah, I'm always happy to come back to this movie. It lives on with all the quotes and everything, so.
Nice.
Yeah, if you haven't, I can't imagine anybody's listening to this at this point that they haven't seen this movie. We gave away the entire thing by this point, but go watch it. You won't regret it.
Scott, did we miss anything? Did we capture everything that we were setting out to do today?
Do you want to hear my story about giving this movie to my boss to watch?
Yes.
Yes. Oh, yes.
Okay, I'll keep it short. Colin, if you're listening, I'll keep it short. That's a joke between me and Colin. So I was working at, this is when I was working at Carolina Tiger Rescue in Pittsburgh. So it was like one of my first, not my first, but one of my first office jobs, working in an office, sitting in front of a computer all day. And my boss was pretty cool. She was like, just to give you an idea of you know, how I got along with my boss. There was one time that she was telling me about something, and I made like this wisecrack, and she just looked at me and went, "You're irreverent." And I looked at her and I went, "Oh, Pam, that's so nice. That's like the nicest compliment a boss has ever given me." And she started laughing because she knew I was serious. Like, I actually appreciated being called irreverent. So anyway, I had a projector, a little movie projector, and a big like 80-inch projector screen, a huge projector screen that I got. And I was talking to people at Carolina Tiger Rescue, and a lot of them have never seen Office Space. So I actually brought my projector and DVD player and everything into the office, set up my screen. We all sat in the office together watching Office Space.
Nice.
But for some reason, and we asked Pam to join us, and for some reason she couldn't be there. So like the next day I'm like, hey, do you want to watch the movie? Here, you can borrow the DVD. Like, I don't know how many people would give their boss a copy of this movie. But she came back a couple days later. She's like, yeah, I didn't think it was that funny. So it's like I didn't get fired or anything, but just
But she wouldn't because it was punching up at her.
I don't think it was. I don't think she saw it that way. I don't think she saw this as like a jab because she wasn't that kind of boss.
Okay, good.
She was not. I don't think she would look at that and say, oh, yeah, you think I'm Lumberg. Yeah, it was just a funny story about giving my boss.
Does she not have
movie.
A sense of humor? Is that why
No, I think she did have actually a really good sense of humor. I think she just, for whatever reason, this particular, you know, some people don't like a particular movie. And I think, you
sounds
know,
like she hates comedy and therefore we hate her.
I think maybe just like Judge.
I'm just kidding.
Maybe she just like was traumatized by Beavis and Butthead and just still wasn't over it. Maybe.
Yeah, could be.
Yeah.
Interesting. well, Scott, thanks for coming on the show today. We appreciate having you here. Talk about a movie that we all love, clearly.
Yeah.
You know, Terrence, as always, we missing anything here before we say goodbye?
I think we covered it. Yeah. All another right. good one.
Cool. All right. Well, thanks everybody for listening. If you want to find out more about what Scott does, we didn't even get into that, but Scott hosts his own podcast. You want to drop a quick plug on your podcast? That
sure.
You
yeah. It's called Creating a Cooler World. That's my new podcast. I started a new one recently and yeah, it's on Apple, Spotify.
Creating a Cool World?
Creating a Cooler World.
Okay. What's it about?
It is about climate change, sustainability, and conservation. And we're celebrating and highlighting people who are doing really cool things to, yeah, help us live in a cooler world. Like one of my recent guests was a lady named Zoe Jewell, who runs a organization called WildTrack, and they actually use footprints and AI to monitor endangered species in the wild. Oh, so wow. Like anybody anywhere in the world can take a picture of a footprint that they find. If you're out hiking, you're out walking your dog, you see a weird footprint, you can take a picture of it, send it to them, and they'll like analyze it, and they can tell like what type of animal it is, how old it is, and they like track animals all over the world by doing this. So, yeah, we just have cool people like that come on and talk about what they're doing. That's the podcast.
Interesting, yeah.
Awesome.
All right. Well, we'll put the links to that in the show notes of this one here. So if anyone wants to check that out, they know where to find you.
Cool. Thank you.
And all right. Cool. Well, thanks for listening, everybody. And we'll check you next time.